Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by UCAN. That's Perform, Workout, Energize. That's GenerationUCAN.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, Blood, Sweat, and Data. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 3,260 grants totaling $4.8 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. To help us out, go to challengedathletes.org and check out any of our interviews on iHeart, on iTunes, or at babville.com. As always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, longtime triathlete, former president of USA Triathlon, now the CEO of USA Team Handball, Mr. Barry Siff. Barry, how the heck you doing?
Doing fantastic, Bob. How are you today?
I am spectacular. So we know each other for years and years and years with the sport of triathlon. And the challenges the sport of triathlon has faced over the years have been addressed by USA Triathlon with between yourself and Rocky Harris. And you look at where the sport is now compared to where it was years ago. We have a gold medalist in Gwen Jorgensen. We've got a pipeline of amazing women with Katie Zafaris and Summer Rappaport and Taylor Spivey under the leadership of Barb Lindquist there. Talk a little about some of the things you are proudest of from overseeing USA Triathlon as the president.
Oh my gosh, I love that question as an opener. Thanks a lot. You know, there are a couple things that stand out. In looking back, the establishment of the USA Triathlon Foundation, I think, was really, really important. I'm beginning to really appreciate that. It has worked to help youth programs, Paralympians, Paralympics, para programs, and our Olympic pipeline. Nothing on the para side compared to what you've done with challenge athletes, but I think we're supporting a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And, you know, it was through our board and our leadership 4 or 5 years ago that got that going. I think the second thing that stands out, Bob, is the NCAA initiative. I think a few years from now, not 20, 30 years, but 5 or 6 years from now, we'll look back with a lot of pride on establishing the commitment, you know, committing over $3 million and lots of staff time to making triathlon, women's triathlon, an NCAA sport, and allowing young girls, just like the millions who are now hoping to become soccer stars in light of our amazing, awesome win in the World Cup, to become triathletes and recognize they can go to college on triathlon scholarships throughout the United States. Those two stand out, and then ultimately the move to bring Rocky Harris in, which has definitely transformed not only the culture of our organization, but how we serve our membership, how we serve our stakeholders, our coaches, our race directors, our officials, our all the people who care and love about the sport. He's just incredible, and I take a lot of pride in having had a role in that.
Probably the one word that I'd use to go along with what's happened in the last number of years, because we used to have you at USA Triathlon, you had Ironman, you had Lifetime Fitness, and everybody was sort of rowing in their own direction, and the collaboration that Rocky has brought to the table, where everybody understands it is time to try. We want to grow the sport, and we do have challenges. Absolutely. With, you know, you've got to swim, you've got a bike, you've got to run. There's a lot of other opportunities for people in endurance sports. And triathlon can be expensive, and for a lot of people it's scary, but if everybody's rowing in the same direction, the sport can continue to grow.
Yeah, you hit it on the head, and that is the number one word that we've used. And it preceded Rocky, but it had a lot to do with bringing Rocky in. You were part of the strategic planning process with USA Triathlon, and I thank you for that. And we developed a strategic plan in 2017 that focused on the word collaboration.
Yep.
We weren't sure how we were going to get it done, but we knew we needed leadership to do it. And that's when Rocky was interviewed, and he really keyed in on that word. It excited him about joining an organization that was going to bring people together, because that's what he's done his entire life, whether it was in professional soccer professional football or at Arizona State University. He brings people together. And he saw that in our vision, and he's carried it out to a T.
What I love, I think his first weekend there, actually might not have even started yet, but there was the 70.3 World Championships in Chattanooga. And got on a plane, I think you went with him, and to meet with Andrew Messick from Ironman and say, listen, let's work together. We got it. We all benefit from growth.
Bob, that was his second day on the job, meeting with Andrew Messick. His first day on the job, he walked about, I don't know, maybe 600 meters up the road from USA Triathlon's headquarters to walk into USA Cycling headquarters to meet with the CEO of USA Cycling and just to say hello. Something we had never done before. We had done zero collaboration with USA Cycling. He did that on his first day on the job, and look what's happened. We now have a joint membership with USA Cycling, a vision that I've talked about, we talked about for a couple of years, Rocky made it happen. So, you know, he's collaborated with Ironman. He's trying to collaborate with Lifetime. He's collaborated with USA Cycling, USA Swimming.
Yep.
He's brought so many people together, Bob, and that's been the beauty of, I think, of our growth, and more importantly, the entire culture change of our organization, because everyone in the organization subscribes just intuitively to collaborating with others and working together. So it's just been phenomenal to watch and to learn from. You know, I've learned a great deal watching Rocky in action.
So when did the opportunity come to become CEO of USA Team Handball? Because I've been watching videos online, and it's a pretty awesome sport. I love it watching it. It's fast-paced. It's basically a combination of basketball, soccer, a little hockey. And it's huge around the world. Is that huge. What attracted you to this? Hey, this is something that's huge around the world, but it's really not doing much in the U.S.
Yeah exactly. I first saw Team Handball in 1996. My family went down to the Atlanta Olympics, spent a week watching Michael Johnson and the track and field, incredible activities in Atlanta in 1996. And one day we happened to get tickets for a thing called Team Handball. That stuck with me for many, many years. I thought it was one of the most amazing sports, fast, athletic, et cetera, and yet it's non-existent in the United States. And in 2016, when I was becoming, to be honest with you, a little discouraged at USA Triathlon, and I had been volunteering for a number of years, spending a lot of time, and I felt like it might be time for me to move on. It just wasn't, it wasn't fun. And as a volunteer, you want to contribute, you want to do for others, but you want to have a little bit of fun. You don't want it to be a headache and a problem that you can't deal with. So I remembered handball, and I actually started talking to the U.S. Olympic Committee in 2016. I had a couple friends. We had an idea on how we could take over this sport in America through a media project, and I had a TV producer and, blah, blah, blah. Met with the USOC, told them our vision, actually met with USA Team Handball and shared it with them, and it kind of fizzled out. But in Rio at the Olympics, I went to the gold medal game of Team Handball.
Yeah.
And at halftime of the gold medal game, I happened to have access to the VIP lounge. I walked in, and there was Thomas Bach, the president of the International Olympic Committee, and Dr. Hassan Mustafa, the president of the International Handball Federation. They're dressed in their suits and ties, and, they're top of the echelon.
Sure.
Whole arena. And I'm there in my shorts and polo shirt saying USA Triathlon, looking like the typical triathlete dude. And I walked up to the two of them. I have pictures that document it from the IOC. And I introduced myself, and people started taking pictures and video. And said, I'm Barry Siff from USA Triathlon. But one of these days soon, I'm going to take over USA Team Handball, and we're going to the Olympics. And they both said to me, you do that, and we'll do whatever we can to help you.
So
fast forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
To getting Rocky on board, fast forward to feeling like triathlon is in very, very good position right now. I went back to the USOC at the end of 2018. I said, I'm ready. And we worked out a way to make this happen. And it took a little bit of work. But on April 15, I resigned from USA Triathlon. I became CEO of U.S. I resigned as president. I'm still on the board of directors.
Yep.
I had to resign because you cannot legally be two officers of two different NGBs.
Mm-hmm.
So I resigned that position and took on CEO of USA Team Handball. And another part of the deal was I'd get support from the U.S. Olympic Committee that they have not been giving USA Team Handball. The U.S. Olympic Committee has become very, very public, primarily supports sports that are going to medal in the Olympics. I mean, that's their one of their major goals. Of course, now it is athlete safety. But, you know, they fund programs that are going to do something at the Olympics, and we have never qualified. We haven't qualified for the Olympics. We only are in the Olympics in handball when we host the Olympics.
Because I know the men's went in. Men became an Olympic sport in 72 for men and 76 for women. So U.S., in all that time, we've never had a team in the Olympics?
We've had them when they've been in the United States.
Oh, so in Atlanta or whatever.
In L.A. in 84, and we're guaranteed a slot in 2028.
I got it.
And so I've gotten, ahead of taking the position on April 15, I got absolute committed support from the U.S. Olympic Committee, absolute committed support from the International Handball Federation, who absolutely are incredible in their support of the United States because they recognize just how important the United States is to any sport in the world.
Right.
And so they want to do what they can, and they're doing a tremendous amount. In fact, last week I was at my first International Handball Federation Congress, which was just incredible. And I was they spoke about the U.S. in very strong way, and I was able to speak to the entire Congress about what we're doing and how we're going to grow the sport here. So it's an exciting time. And, you know, the incredible statistic, Bob, when you say it's pretty popular around the world, it was the second most ticketed sport in Rio behind soccer.
Wow.
More eyeballs watched handball in Rio than they watched track and field, swimming, or gymnastics. I mean, it's amazing. And I witnessed it last week in Gothenburg, Sweden. There was a youth. Now, you've got to picture this, and I know you'll appreciate it. The world's largest youth team handball competition. 24,000 kids from 90 countries.
Oh, my God.
In one city, playing handball day and night.
Any U.S. kids there?
Team from San Francisco.
Wow, yep. one team.
We had a team, one team from the United States, and it was glorious. They had the opening ceremony. They came with the American flag. It was just brilliant. And I can guarantee in coming years we'll have a lot more teams there. But 24,000 kids playing handball and at a very high level. And we've got a long ways to go, but we've got pockets. We've got people in L.A. playing. We've got people in San Francisco, Chicago, Boston, Washington, D.C., Miami. It's growing. And I think we're in a good place right now. We have qualified for the first time in a decade both our men's and women's teams for the Pan Am Games.
That's huge.
So they'll be that's huge, absolutely. And all your friends in California, especially in the San Diego and L.A. area, will be really into the beach handball. It's not an Olympic sport yet. I absolutely predict that it will be in L.A. And beach handball, very much like beach volleyball.
Right.
Different rules, but really fun. And our women's and men's team, as we speak, are in Trinidad and Tobago playing a tournament over the next couple of days that will qualify them, hopefully, for the World Championships next year, and also the upcoming World Beach Games, which moved from San Diego to either Qatar, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Doha. Yeah.
So
yeah, there's a lot of exciting things happening.
When I look at how you grow a sport, right, you got to start with the kids. You got to be available in a high school, a grammar school, colleges. The thing is that it seems like a pretty simple – we talk about triathlon, right? Triathlon, you need a pool, you need water, you need bikes.
Exactly.
You need stuff.
Exactly.
There's a lot of shtick going on. But you're talking about, hey, you need a gym and a ball, right?
I keep saying you need a ball and duct tape.
Really?
A ball and duct tape. You could go out in a parking lot. Put
absolutely.
Duct tape up, put a couple cans up. You got a goal. Oh, yeah. Bob, I give that speech over and over. Coming from triathlon.
Oh, this is a cake.
You need pool, you need water. Exactly.
Nobody's getting hit by a bus, and nobody's getting eaten by a shark. You got it. Yeah. This is, I'm going, wait a second, this is, looks pretty easy. It's sort of like the difference between putting on a triathlon and putting on a running event. Basically, you put on a running event, you stand at the start, you shoot the gun, you go get lunch, and wait for people to finish. Right? When you're putting on a triathlon, yeah, you're like, did everybody get out of the water alive? Okay, I can take a breath. Is everybody off the bike alive? Okay, I can. Now they're doing the run. I don't have to worry about anything.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
When Jody and I owned 5430 Sports in Boulder and put on events, we put on, you know, obviously made triathlons, and we also put on some running races, and boy, did you hit it. We would wake up on, you know, the weekend of a triathlon was just hell. And then we'd put on a running race. You'd wake up at 8 or 9 in the morning, you'd go down, set up whatever, because our races were at 6 at night in Boulder.
They
were
nighttime
races during the week. And so, you know, get up at 8, 9 in the morning, go down there, set up a little start line, set up finish line. We'd be home by 9 or 10 at night and say, well, that was fun.
Yeah.
And then triathlon, you know, so complicated. But hey, I mean, the rewards, you know, I thought about this morning before we had this conversation. I know you're very famous and so apropos saying, you know, triathlon is life-changing. I mean, you have contributed to that.
No question.
So many ways. I'm not going to call handball life-changing. It's just fun. It's kick-ass. It's aggressive. And when you talk about, you know, getting hit on the roads, the injuries that I have seen in handball is so physical. When I talk about why handball is the best American sport unknown in America, it's because it's fast, it's athletic as heck, and it's very and high scoring and physical. The average guy in Europe who is at the top of a game is like between 6'2 and 6'4, 215 pounds, and has about a 40 to 44 inch vertical leap.
Wow.
I mean, they jump, they are physical. It's incredibly acrobatic and really fast. It's an amazing sport, but you're right. It's very simple to set up. I mean, you know, if I had 10 or 12 friends over here, we could go outside. We could set up a little court. I got a ball here in my office, and we could play handball. I mean, it's that simple.
Is the ball different? Is it like a volleyball?
Yeah, I'm holding it right now.
Yeah.
A little smaller than a volleyball. It's hard. It's incredible. So they put this GPS. Some of them have a GPS system now at the sophisticated events where they can show you how fast the ball is being thrown, like a baseball.
Wow.
And it's being thrown at about 70 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
It's being thrown. Yeah. It's being thrown just a little slower than a baseball, and it's hitting people. So I saw a video of someone, a goalie, getting hit in the throat with the ball, and he was down.
Of course.
He was down. You know, you get welts, and it's very hard. And the shots are amazing. That's why when you mention the like sports, I think a lot of people call it water polo without water. I think that's a great description.
That really is.
Water polo on a basketball court. And I think there's great talent transfer. I mean, I'm going to hire a sport performance director, and he and I met last week, and hopefully we'll be able to hire him.
Yeah.
And we talked about talent transfer of athletes, and you know, water polo and basketball players seem pretty natural. And then we got to get them over to Europe to play.
Right.
And that's what we're doing right now. We've got about 6 or 8 people that we have in the last couple of weeks contracted with European clubs to let them play on these clubs, play with the best, learn from the best, and then bring what they've learned back here.
If you think about it, when Barb Lindquist went to Australia to train to race that International Triathlon Grand Prix and finished last at the first year and then every year until she won the thing. But our guys have to race and train a lot in Europe because that's where the best triathletes are and that's where the best races are.
You bet.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. They can't just stay here and play against each other and train at the same level. So that's our intent. And we've got, you know, you hit it on the head right from the beginning when you talked about youth, high schools, colleges, and elite. The IHF, the International Handball Federation, has started, just unveiled last week, a program called Handball at School. They have brochures, they have videos, they've got everything to support bringing handball into schools. And it's kind of like triathlon in a box that we helped develop at USAT. this is handball at school, and we've got to get into the school systems. We've got to get our clubs around the country bringing it into the school systems because, as you mentioned, it's real easy to play, it's easy to understand, and it's fun. And, you know, in Europe, they're growing up playing this in the schools. They start, you know, 5, 6 years old, and, you know, they become the best in the world. I attended the Final Four of the European Handball Federation event a couple weeks ago in Cologne, Germany. It matched the fever pitch of a soccer match between Argentina and Brazil. Indoors, 20,000 sold out.
Wow.
$1,000 a ticket. People were paying 1,000 euro a ticket. And the production was just first class. And it just created a vision that I really do believe we can bring here. I've got people working already on a pro league, a professional league concept. And I'm just really jacked up about it, Bob.
So what I like about it, too, is when you think football, you need to be some, you know, 300-pound guy. Basketball, you need to be 6'11", 7 feet. When you talk 6'2 to 6'4", and obviously people 6 feet can get it, these are sort of normal-sized people, which people can relate to. If you think about the number of guys who come through high school, and they're, you know, they're 5'11", 6 feet when they're a freshman, and by junior year, they're still that tall, and their buddies are now all 6'8", and their hope of playing at the next level goes away. That seems like a fertile environment for a target-rich environment for you guys to grab those people with that skill set who feel that, you know what, they're sort of sized out. They can't. They're not going to become 6'8".
Well, I think we can get. You're absolutely right. I mean, and it is all sizes. I mean, there are also smaller players, but they've got to be incredibly athletic.
Right.
I was with a lady from Romania who chairs the Federation, the International Handball Federation Women's Commission. She's a gold medalist, I believe, from Romania. And she's like 6'2", super athletic. But there are other women who are, you know, different size and same on the men's side. But it, you know, it is those athletes, I think, who check out a basketball or football or whatever sport. And it's kind of like triathlon.
Totally.
For that. What can I do now?
Yeah. You're a 29-minute 10K guy. You're a 29-minute 10K guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not going pro as a runner. You're like, wait a second, I got a swimming background. Maybe because you don't want to give that up. You still want to be a top-level athlete.
Well, hey, I got a great example for you. And you may know the name Lewis Howes.
I don't know if I do.
Lewis Howes played professional football. He played arena football, was a star, was a phenomenal athlete, broke his wrist. Never really came back, retired. Then he saw this thing called handball and heard it was in the Olympics. So the frickin' guy just packs up from, I think, wherever he was living, moves to New York because he heard the best handball club was in New York. And he knocks on their door and says, hey, can you teach me how to play handball? I want to go to the Olympics. Well, this was like 2012. And now it's 2018. He's representing the U.S. on our national team. He'll be at the Pan Am game. You know, I mean, et
That's
cetera,
cool.
et cetera. He went and did that. Ty Reed is another guy. Ty Reed played wide receiver at Alabama, but he wasn't quite good enough to make the pros. He's playing handball. So, I mean, it's actual stories, actual people, and we're going to open up that opportunity. Problem is nobody knows about the sport, Bob. I need your marketing out.
Absolutely. No, I'm thinking about this. I saw spike ball on TV the other day. Okay. If spike ball is doing TV, handball.
No, time out. Sunday night, I was at a bar in Scottsdale, Arizona with a goalkeeper from Germany.
Yep.
He's here training at Altus, I think it's Altus here in Scottsdale, real high level training.
Right.
Professional. You probably know it. It's really, really the Exos. Anyway. We met. We were going to talk about how to develop the sport here. We're in this place having a beer. There's cornhole on television.
Yes, cornhole. They've got logos on. They've got sponsors.
Yeah, and they're sponsored. These guys are sponsored at cornhole. And he and I are looking at each other. In Europe, this thing's on television all the time. $1 million contracts, et cetera, et cetera. And we got cornhole on television in the United States. So, you know, that's the. Not, I don't consider it a challenge. I consider it a huge opportunity.
Big time.
For what we're going to do at USA Team Handball. I mean, we're starting. It's a startup business. I mean, in my first week, I went to New York City to meet with a very big potential sponsor. I didn't have any business cards. You know, Jody, my wife, made up business cards for me on our printer at home.
Yes.
I mean, this is a startup business. And, you know, right now it's myself and the former CEO, who's operations director right now. We're working together. It's, you know, it's a very small operation, and we're on our way up.
I love it. So the way it's played.
I want to tell you one other thing that's very relevant to you. The IHF last week had a video and a presentation on wheelchair handball.
Yes.
And it's wheelchair basketball, man, but it's handball. It's into a net.
I you know what? And it's a combination. It's almost like quad rugby as well, because they play that in a gym with a ball.
Exactly. So they gauged an interest. They're trying to push it. And I think you and I are going to be talking about wheelchair handball in the near future.
We could be doing camps for that here in San Diego. That would be really cool. And our guys would love it.
Cool.
So when you play seven players, goalie and six other players, you can dribble it a couple of times? It seems like it's constant movement.
You can dribble as much as you want, but you get three steps.
Okay, so you can dribble in place. And now if you're standing there, you have to get rid of the ball, every 3 seconds or something?
You've got to get rid of the ball, yeah. It's the referees will raise their hand if you're kind of stalling.
Right.
And then they'll take the ball away from you. My first reaction when I first saw it was, we need a 30-second clock.
Right.
And everybody's laughed at me because they say they hear that all the time. But the reality is, many more shots are scored, you know, within about 18 to 22 seconds. And because of the way the defense is, a 30-second clock doesn't seem very practical, because you can literally knock down someone and not get any penalty. The penalty is you start over again. The guy gets back up and they get the ball again. It's that physical. You can stop someone from dribbling by basically wrapping your arms around them and stopping them. And then the ref will blow the whistle and you start over again. It's hard to understand some of the defensive nuances, but suffice it to say, it's very, very physical and there aren't technical fouls. You literally have to just shove and grab and throw someone down to get a 2-minute penalty.
So it really is a lot like water polo. No autopsy, no foul.
It really is. Yeah, absolutely.
So you can touch the ball with any body part above the knee. So there's no kicking the ball. There's no kneeing the ball,
right.
Any of that type of stuff.
Well, yeah, it took me about 2 months before I learned that. I was 3 weeks into the job before I ever touched a handball. I mean, I'm still learning, Bob, and there's a lot to learn. But I'm not going to be a coach, you know. I just got to put the players in the right place. I mean, that's the way you put an organization together, and that's why I'm excited about bringing on hopefully a really top-notch, you know, a marketing person to help us on marketing and social media and digital media and OTT opportunities, and then bringing on a sport performance director and, you know, hopefully bringing on a superstar to bring us to the promised land.
So my guess is, with knowing that you're in the Olympics for 2028, is that the target?
That's correct.
Yeah, you're like, okay, listen.
Nope.
No.
So the strategic plan that I was handed, that is the target.
Right.
100%. The whole buildup, the international, everybody's saying 2028. Bob, I don't want to talk about how old I am, but you know I'm old.
Yeah. The clock is ticking. Yeah, that's a long way away. I know.
That's a long way away. I'm going to Paris. I've told everybody. I'm in this for 5 years. You know, I'm not a long term. You know, listen. I want to make USA Team Handball super sustainable. I know we're going to be in LA. We're going to be in Paris, and I said that at the International Handball Federation Congress last week. My goal, I think, organization goal. You know, the U.S. with our athlete talent, with the number of athletes we have, and the support that we're getting from the USOC and the International Handball Federation, there's no reason our women and men won't be represented in Paris. And that's what I'm shooting for. But, yeah, I mean, the long-term goal is definitely L.A. And we want to be very, very competitive in Los Angeles.
So at this point, are there there's really no pro teams in the U.S., right? But there are pro teams throughout Europe?
So, oh, yeah, there are many, many pro leagues throughout Europe.
Okay.
And full-time professional athletes. So the guy that I met with, Martin Ziemer, on Sunday night from Germany, he plays for a team, and this is all he does. You know, he's a goalkeeper. But let me tell you this: we have, I don't know how many, it might be a dozen or 14 American passport holding players who play on European clubs. So we have a handful of players who are playing professional handball in Europe already. And that comprises most of our national team. When you look at the teams that we're going to have, the men's team that we're going to have in Pan Am, they're from all over the world. They're Germany, they're Swedish, they're, you know, Norwegian. They're mainly dual citizens who will represent the U.S. But we want to develop the Lewis Howes. We want to develop the Ty Reeds. Our women's team is much more American-based, and we want to build upon that. So, you know, but to develop the pro league, we want to have, you know, we need to have about 12 to 16 teams. So we need a couple hundred players, and that's the plan. We have a strategic plan to get those few hundred players, get them trained up, get those football players, get those basketball and water polo players and youngsters who are playing right now, some of the college kids right now who are playing in clubs. There are probably about 20 collegiate clubs today, Bob, much like our collegiate triathlon program.
Yes.
And that is a major, major initiative together with the International Handball Federation to grow the collegiate clubs here in America. We have a working group where the U.S. Olympic Committee is helping us put together, learning from sports like ultimate and rugby and lacrosse and how they've grown from collegiate clubs. And our intention is to get 100 collegiate clubs by the end of 2020 for sure throughout the country. We have them now at Ohio State. We have them at North Carolina, West Point, Air Force, et cetera. And we need to get these pockets, these cities, major areas and grow the collegiate clubs in New York and Boston and Washington, D.C. and Miami, and et cetera, et cetera.
Do you see beach handball similar to what's happened with, you know, beach volleyball, that will become an Olympic sport as well?
I do. I absolutely. I know that the handball people thought it was going to be in Paris.
Yeah.
And instead, of course, we know they went with breakdancing or break, as they call it, and a couple others. Obviously disappointed in that. But, I think beach handball, if the International Federation plays its cards right, you know, I've learned so much from the leadership of the International Triathlon Union. As you know, I'm on that executive board. I intend to remain on that executive board. The leadership there did such a phenomenal job on getting the mixed relay into the Olympics.
Yes.
It was a strategic objective. They stuck to it. They did it very, very well. If the International Handball Federation does that with beach handball, there is absolutely no question in my mind it will be in L.A. It was made for L.A.
No question. Yeah. What a great launch for that.
So we've got to get to the L.A. 2028 people. We've got to get it huge in California, which is where it's based. I mean, the Legacy Triathlon, which I know you'll be at, Bob, and you know, on July 20, I can't wait to be there. I'm going to meet with beach handball people while I'm there. That's where they're all at. So, yeah, I think beach handball will definitely be in the Olympics, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun to watch.
So similar, when we launched triathlon in the Olympics in 2000 in Sydney. And the first event of the games was a women's triathlon. And a lot of, my friends and relatives had heard me talking about this sport and Ironman, but, you know, they really didn't see a lot on it. And then all of a sudden it's the first event of the games and you're seeing the Sydney Opera House and you're seeing the harbor and their crowds are 30 deep along the way and people are going crazy. That really helped put the sport on the map. And
absolutely,
that's what you're looking potentially if you get beach if you get beach handball in 2028.
Yeah, and I think even more than that, if we can get the pro, you know, way before 2028, we get the pro league going.
Yeah.
And we get some media coverage here in the States, you know,
right.
Some other ideas on, I mean, the concept that I had in 2016, Bob, was to have a kind of Netflix 30 for 30, whatever it is, documentary on building the next great America sport.
Mm-hmm. Great idea. Yeah.
And it, what we were going to do was track going out and having tryouts in New York and LA and San Francisco and Chicago, having tryouts, bringing these athletes. And at that time, we were trying to get Tim Tebow involved, and right at the same time that he went into baseball. Because I don't know if it was the New York Times or the Washington Post, but it was at the time of Rio, they ran a story on, why is handball, and I have many of these stories, why is handball non-existent in the United States?
Yeah.
I mean, we throw, we run, we jump, but we don't play handball. And so, you know, our vision was let's document building this team from scratch. We were going to go out and get football players, basketball players, water polo players. We were going to quietly build this team, and then we were going to challenge USA Team Handball to a match, winner take all. We win, we take over the federation. You win, we walk. That was the idea. I thought it was a brilliant, you know, and just we ran into, political complications, you know, some other matters, and we walked away from it. But I still feel that way. I still feel like, you know, we can go out and we can make this media project that will bring interest to the sport. We've got to get eyeballs. We've got to get people to see the sport. Because, Bob, like you, every 100%, 100% of people I've met who have seen handball, either on video, on TV, or in person, say the same thing. What a cool sport. I don't know why it's not big in America. So we just got to get people to see it, and then we're off and running.
Well, there's no barrier to entry, right? That's the great thing. Now, and the thing that made triathlon so successful, really different from a lot of the other NGBs, was the age group side, right? We got age group triathletes, millions of them, training and racing, and then the Olympics.
Yeah.
The Olympics was not the end-all be-all because it was, you know, the Olympics was there, but the age group racing was, people make money off it, right? That people putting on these events. Do you see this? Because it's funny, I was riding my bike at Fiesta Island the other day, and there was, other weekend, there was a freaking spike ball tournament, and the place was jammed at Fiesta Island. I'm like, oh, my God, this is crazy. I could this being that type of sport, that it could just catch on.
Yeah. In fact, one of my kickoff visions is to set up a court in Times Square and just play handball in Times Square. You know, it's not a it's very different than triathlon. Triathlon is a, you know, a life-changing lifestyle sport. You know, my good friend, Simon Butterworth, 73 years old and loving triathlon at 73. I don't think you're going to be playing team handball at 73.
In fact,
I was at an all-star game last week in Sweden and tied in with this Partille Cup where the 24,000 kids were playing. Well, they put on a kind of a all-star game of the who's who from the past. And one of the guys was, Magnus was named the handball player of the century.
Oh, my God.
Of the century. And he was there playing. He's like 53, 54 years old. And, you know, he's slow. I mean, he's still amazing and can shoot the three-pointer like Michael Jordan can. But you know, you're not out there playing handball when you're in your 50s. There's a guy, and a great guy in San Francisco, Jean-Marc. He's 52 and he's still playing on the San Francisco Cal Heat team. But, you know, that's far and few between. So I see it as a school sport, grade school, high school, college, for sure. Collegiate club. And then you've got to have the professional league, and then you have city leagues. Right now we had an open national championship in Myrtle Beach about a month and a half, 2 months ago, 28 clubs from around the United States. These clubs are comprised of people from other countries who grew up playing handball who now live in Washington, D.C., New York, Chicago, you know, the big cities, they
sure.
got jobs. Some of them are au pairs. Some of them work at the United Nations, literally, or diplomats in Washington. And they've created clubs in these cities, and these are the best clubs. So New York City ended up playing San Francisco for the championship this year. And the statistic I was told that 80% of the players that were at Myrtle Beach for the U.S. national championship had dual citizenships with other countries.
Wow.
So, you know, that's what we're working with today. But the plate is wide open. The barrier to entry, as you so keenly pointed out, is minimal. And it's just a fun sport to play.
So as somebody who is inside at USA Triathlon, as we were trying to get into the Paralympics with paratriathlon, how tough was that journey? Take me through that a little bit, because I wasn't on the inside of that. Obviously, I was pushing from the outside. But watching it in 2016 in Rio, seeing it become a Paralympic sport, was and not just a Paralympic sport, but a great Paralympic sport. How hard was it to make that happen?
Yeah, it took a big commitment. As you know, many of the NGBs, the national governing bodies within the U.S. Olympic Committee, chose not to take over the para side. And therefore, you have the U.S. Olympic Committee running a number of and managing a number of the para sports.
Right.
USA Triathlon early on raised their hand and said, we'll commit to that. And that was the initial commitment was before my time, but we maintained that. And it was a challenge early on. I mean, it was a challenge, and I think it's just a do the right thing commitment to open up the inclusivity envelope of our sport. And I think that's something that USA Triathlon and, to be honest with you, the whole world of triathlon led by the International Triathlon Union, the issue of diversity and inclusion is at the heart and soul of our sport. You speak to it. Marisol Casado speaks to it. Rocky Harris speaks to it. We want to put our arms around everybody and show them that this sport is awesome. As you call it, the greatest sport in the world.
No question.
And you know, we want everybody to be able. We don't want any barriers to stop people from participating. I think it was that philosophy that USA Triathlon committed to. At times, it's so challenging because, you know, you are dealing with a relatively small segment of the population. And when the financial, if you focus on the financial factor, it doesn't make sense. If all you care about is dollars and cents and profitability, it does not make sense. It doesn't work. But so you have to have higher values. And I think that's the beauty of the leadership of our sport, whether it's, again, ITU, USA Triathlon, Challenge Athletes Foundation, the Bob Babbitts of the world who transcend the dollars and cents value. And so, you know, I'm proud of what we've done. I think the coolest thing, and, you know, I've talked to John Farah. We were together in Montreal at the WTS event up there and the WPS, the para event up there. And, you know, when para first started on the stage, the U.S. was far and away the strongest nation in the world. I mean, you know, it was almost, I wouldn't say it was embarrassing, it was awesome, but we really led the world in para. And now, you know, I saw this 2 years ago and I saw it last year in Sarasota. You know, you see Brazil, you see Colombia, the country of Colombia. I mean, they're all catching up to us. And that is spectacular. It's so cool to see paratriathlon throughout the world. But it's also pushing us to get a little bit more aggressive. You know, we can't rest on our laurels. And some of our athletes we've seen, you know, the Melissa Sockwells and Alyssa Seeley's, you know, even though Grace Norman is very young, you know, she's been around. And, you know, we got to be
new people.
Looking for those next stars, new people, because these other countries are really, really catching up to us. I mean, in Montreal, in the visually impaired, I don't remember a podium where we were not on the podium on the visually impaired female side, and we weren't on the podium.
Yeah, it's changing. What I love is for Legacy, for the first time ever, there'll be prize money for para, which I think is awesome, between USA Tri and CAF and Toyota.
How awesome.
It's over a $30,000 prize purse. And I think that's sort of maybe a little bit of message to ITU that, you know what, guys, we need to start having some money out there.
Yep. I think you're absolutely right. And really, really proud of that with the prize purse for that triathlon. No question about it, Bob.
So when you look back at being there in Rio, and you know, two things happening, obviously Gwen winning a gold, and you were when Gwen won a gold. What was the feeling?
Right there.
I know.
Oh my God. Well, the irony, I don't know that I've ever publicly talked about this, but I was at the finish line, just past the finish line, obviously, when they come through, with Brett Sutton. Mm-hmm. So Brett Sutton and I were side by side, and of course, Brett Sutton was Nicholas Spirit's coach.
Right.
And I had been watching the race with Gene Sykes, who, as you know, was CEO of LA 2028. And he was, you know, observing all the sports, and we happened to be watching the race. But when it was coming down to, you know, the final, whatever, couple K of the run, I went down to the finish area, and there was Brett, who I know.
Yes.
And we were side by side waiting for that finish. And, of course, you know, Gwen made her move, her signature statement, and came across the line. And I was there to hug her when she came. I was there in my sport jacket, my ITU sport jacket, and I'll never forget that feeling, crying my eyes out, and her crying, but looking, of course, for Patrick, her husband, who is just, you know, such an important part of that team. And the feeling was just incredible. I mean, obviously, up till that point, in the 16 years preceding from 2000 on, Susan Williams was the only person in history to have won any medal, and that was a bronze medal, which was awesome. But we hadn't reached that plateau. So, yeah, it was certainly incredible. We rejoiced, her whole family, that night at the Team USA house, celebrating the vision. I'm sitting here talking about it. You know, I remember vividly her family just is so awesome, her support she has. And, you know, the talk about it takes a village to get on the podium. There's no greater statement than Gwen Jorgensen, whether it's Bob Lindquist, who, you know, brought Gwen into the program, or the Timex multisport team, or, you know, Cindy who coached her on the Timex team from the beginning, and, you know, everybody, and of course Patrick and her whole supportive family. It's been amazing. So you know, that was incredible, and just the whole experience at Rio, I'm not sure we were able to capitalize on it. I think my only disappointment was not seeing that huge spike that, you know, we all know Simon Whitfield did in Canada.
Yeah, no question about it.
But those were in the early days. You know, triathlon, I think, is pretty well embedded in America today, even though our numbers are not enormous. They're not near where, you know, we'd like them to be. You know, we want to be a mainstream sport, but we are in the mainstream consciousness. You know, when I meet people and, you know, I'll say, yeah, I do triathlon. I say, yeah, well, you look like a triathlete. Everybody knows triathlon.
They do.
But I think there's an intimidation factor. And boy, oh boy, do I know you know that, Bob. Because you do everything you can to, you know.
We try to break down those barriers.
Triathlon. Yeah. Yeah, break down those barriers. But so many people, we all hear the same thing. You know, oh my God, I could never do that. Well, of course, you and I both say, of course you can. You know, they're not. You know, that whole persona of being this incredibly difficult event.
People, because they know the term triathlon from Ironman, and they think you need to be an uber athlete to do it. And when you break it down and say, listen, did you wear arm floaties as a kid? Did you have a paper route? Did you play capture the flag? You've got our skill set. You don't need to be 6'8", right? You don't need to be 6'8". Yeah. You don't need to be have a 12 pack. You can do anybody can do it.
And now I'm really excited about what I hope will be the next version of triathlon. I have gotten into stand-up paddling.
Ah.
Because I'm now living on Tempe Town Lake.
Nice.
And with the consultation with Rock Fry, the king of stand-up.
Yes,
Jody and I now are stand-up paddling, and I've seen where there are a few stand-up paddleboard triathlons where the stand-up paddling's instead of the swim.
I know.
As a horrible swimmer, that was made for me, so I'm waiting for that to be an alternative, and hopefully we'll have one of those here in Tempe soon.
That's all you need is more equipment in triathlon to make it even, right? Yeah. You need a paddle board, you need a paddle, you need a bike, you need a wetsuit. Oh, my God. Let's add more shtick to it. I like that.
You've got me there.
Yeah. So the one thing I think was risky at the time, but certainly has paid off. When the decision was made, listen, we're not competing on the world stage here. So what we're going to do is we're going to identify people out of college and who have swim and run backgrounds, and then try to teach them to ride a bike and then compete with the best people in the world who've been doing this their whole lives. And, it worked really well for the women. Gwen Jorgensen, she just graduated with her CPA, was going to start at Ernst & Young. And then, hey, why don't you go out and ride a bike with Tom Shuler and learn how to clip in. And 2 years later, you'll be on the Olympic team. And then you'll be the best in the world and you'll win a gold medal. And then followed with Katie Zafaris from Steeplechase. And when the decision was made, okay, we're going to bring Barb Lindquist, Olympian, in here, and she's going to go out and recruit. And what happened with the women in a very short period of time was amazing.
Amazing.
And so what led to that? Was that a group decision? Like, listen, we don't have the time to get into the schools at this point and start developing triathletes. We want to. But that's an 8-12 year program. We need to do something quickly.
First of all, that started just before I came on the board, and Andy Schmitz, the high performance director back then, the leadership of the sport, together with people like Barb and Bobby McGee, et cetera, obviously developed this concept. They looked at statistics. The thing about, Barb together with Bobby McGee's help, this wasn't let's just go out and find some swimmers and runners. It was very scientific.
Yes.
I mean, they, every standard, every tryout, it was brilliant. And, it was supposed to be on the women and men's side. And, it clearly was not successful on the men's side.
Yeah, that's
it
difficult.
It was on the women's side. And lots of theories on that. But it doesn't matter why we weren't successful. We realized we weren't. And I think the one thing that I'm also really proud of is we said, let's retool. So a couple years ago, we had a summit on our men's high performance program. We basically said, it ain't working. Let's blow it up. What's working on the women's side is great. Let's keep that going. But we got to do something dramatically different. And that's when the talks with a guy by the name of Rocky Harris, who worked at Arizona State University as the chief operating officer in the athletic department, Andy Schmitz started talking to this guy, Rocky Harris. And together, because Rocky at that time at ASU, was a triathlete, bought into it. Ray Anderson, the athletic director at Arizona State, who's one of the best athletic directors in the United States, is very supportive of Olympic sports, said, heck, what can we do to help on the men's side to bring along men? And we realized people like Tony Smorgowitz, who went, one of the greatest young triathletes ever, goes to Michigan on a track scholarship, right?
Yes.
And we need to keep these people. And then most recently, Austin Hinman, who I saw in Cozumel at the World Championships, wins the World Junior Championship over Alex Yee from Great Britain, who we knew was going to be a superstar.
Exactly.
Austin, Austin wins this race, and then he goes to the University of Missouri on a running scholarship. So we realize we can't let these people leave the sport for 4 years and expect them to come back. So Arizona State stepped up. Rocky Harris, at that time at Arizona State, stepped up with Ray Anderson. And we developed this Project Podium concept and put some money into it, invest in these kids who, you know, are in college, these young men who might be starting college or already in college, and we recruit six or eight of the best. We get this amazing young coach, Parker Spencer. You know, next thing you know, we've got some young men today who, while they will probably not be in Tokyo, I would be shocked if one or more of them is not in Paris in 2024, because their growth, advancement, progress has been incredible. And we're taking 18, 19, 20-year-old young men who have been doing triathlon for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, like Javier Gomez and Alistair Brownlee did.
Yep.
And now we're keeping them in the sport while they're getting their education at the same time. It's pretty awesome.
So basically, it's like the male version of what you're doing with NCAA. You're creating a college atmosphere for the guys.
Exactly. I just remember myself saying to our previous CEO, why can't we just tell Austin Hinman, wherever you want to go to college, you go, we'll pay for it, and we'll give you a coach, but you got to do triathlon. That was kind of like the big picture. Like, what?
Right.
Why can't we just pay them? I mean, is there anything illegal about that? You know, that was kind of some of the early, you know, just brainstorming of, you know, what's stopping us from doing this? And then, of course, Andy and his team and Arizona State comes up with the idea. And, you know, that's where we are today, helping support our young men in a different way, and these other countries are all doing that. I mean,
sure. They start early.
They start very, very early.
Very early,
and that's why you're seeing, for example, in France, who has a tremendous youth development pipeline and program. People, you know, their young men and women are now starting to be on the big stage because they've been in the sport for 7, 8, 10 years, and they're not taking 2, 3, and 4 year breaks to go to college.
So, Barry, first of all, thanks for taking so much time. I love the background in triathlon, how that's led to your new passion, team handball. If people want to find out more about team handball, how to help support, how to go watch games that are here in the States,
where should
they go?
Well, right now, they can go to usateamhandball.org, usateamhandball.org. I will say, and I will tell you, in 3 or 4 months, it will be dramatically changed. But it is what it is today. It will show you current activities. It will show you where clubs are at. And it will have streams, for example, live streams of different world championships from Europe, or our teams competing in things like the North American Caribbean Beach Handball Championships or in the Pan Am Games. I mean, I think we'll have opportunities to watch the Pan Am Games live, and that will be really exciting. And I super appreciate your support, Bob. And again, just, you know, I was proud to be part of the induction when you came in the USA Triathlon Hall of Fame. I know how you've remained so active and so supportive of USA Triathlon, and got to get you into handball now, man.
Exactly. Exactly. I love all the new sports. It's always fun. Hey,
you
were one of those early adopters with adventure racing.
Thanks.
And that was one of the things that we loved. And all the offshoots, Aqua Bike and Aquathon, and CEO of USA Team Handball. That is the coolest thing.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, Bob.
Barry Siff.
We'll see you out on the road.
Absolutely. Barry Siff has been our guest again, CEO, USA Team Handball. Check it out. It's going to grow it's going to grow crazy here in the U.S. because Barry knows how to move the needle on any type of sport. Again, Barry Siff has been our guest. We are brought to you by UCAN. Again, generationucan.com is where to go. Perform, workout, energized by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, by Polar, Blood, Sweat, and Data, By our Challenge Athletes Foundation, we sent out 3,260 grants this past year, totaling $4.8 million. Keep Challenge Athletes in the game alive through sport. To help out, go to challengeathletes.org, and you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes.com, on iHeart.com, or at Babbittville.com. As always, endurance lives here.